Football Weekly is on the air.
One back set, two receivers. Jake from center. Play fake, slight roll, stop, now pops. Throwing open, down, goal line, end zone. Touchdown, Devin Hester. Touchdown, Bears. And a beauty.
And waiting back at his own 20, coming up to get him to 23. Sherrills slips the tackle. Still on his feet across the 40. Down the sideline. To the 30. To the 20. And Sherrills will bring it the distance a 100 times for a touchdown of 77 yards.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, Brady and Manning meet again, and the Texans look to go 5-0.
It's official, Wayne. We are just short of full-blown quarterback controversies in Seattle and Kansas City, and could the Tennessee Titans be next?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. And we begin with senior editor Nolan Naraki. Nolan, there are some surprise teams out there in the NFL, quite a few of them, matter of fact. But I think the Vikings, above and beyond all of those teams that may be cast as surprise teams, they might be the most surprising team of the league thus far.
Absolutely, Wayne. You look at what they've done, it's a big shock that they're sitting at 3-1 right now, matching their win total from a year ago. I played for Leslie Frazier at Illinois, and I know his style well. I didn't talk to Les, but I did talk to people in the organization, and what I was told is that the Vikings spent a lot of time in the offseason studying how the 49ers were built and how they were able to flip their organization from a 6-10 team to a 13-3 in 1 year. And I think it's really paid dividends for the Vikings this year. At the core of their philosophy is a sound, ball control, mistake-free power football team predicated on the strength of their defense, and they've really got it done this year with that D.
Nolan, I think a lot of the credit, a lot of people don't even know, defensive coordinator Alan Williams. Yeah, Les, he's an old friend and he's a great defensive coach, but he's the head coach. He's got Williams in there coordinating that defense. And the way that defensive line is playing, you know, and it's not who you think it is. You know, the William twins have been broken up, and Ray Edwards is long gone, and, you know, Jared Allen is still there, but this is a bunch of new guys really getting it done.
Yeah, I think they have more interior speed on the defensive line than any team in the league. You look at LaTroy Guyon, Christian Ballard, Everson Griffin. They made Steven Peterman and Jeff Backus look like high school blockers last week. It was a phenomenal job. They're bringing a lot of pressure on the inside, and I think they've been really disruptive, and that's been the key to that team.
And, you know, Nolan, the one other thing is Christian Ponder, he looks good. We don't know if he's going to be a franchise guy. But there's not much else on that offense. Adrian Peterson is about 85-90%. Percy Harvin is a workhorse, but he's so small. And so you do wonder how much longer they can continue to play like this.
Yeah, they have a very friendly schedule coming up. They have Tennessee, Washington. Arizona's been playing well, but they're definitely a team that can be beaten. Tampa Bay, Seattle, Detroit. I think they got a chance to ride out this next wave. If they can keep things the way they have been, there's a chance they can come out strong at the midway point. But after the Week 11 bye, you have the Packers and Bears twice. You have the Texans. There's a good chance there could be a late-season collapse.
All right. Thank you very much, Nolan Naraki, on the surprise team of the NFL thus far after the first quarter of the season, the Minnesota Vikings. We welcome in Associate Editor Arthur Arkush. Arthur, the big news this week, sad news. Chuck Pagano, the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, hospitalized 6 to 8 weeks undergoing treatment for leukemia. Obviously, that came as a huge shock to everyone.
Absolutely. And, you know, of course, we'll point out that, you know, whatever happens on the field is second to, you know, Coach Pagano's recovery. And they are optimistic he will be able to make a full recovery. The statistics are in his favor, but of course he's going to have a very rough road ahead. So what it means for the football team is that offensive coordinator Bruce Arians has been named the interim head coach. He has 20 years of NFL coaching experience. I think they should be in pretty good hands there, but this is obviously a big blow. The good news is they have some veteran leadership. It's obviously a very, very young team, but they do have Robert Mathis, Reggie Wayne, Dwight Freeney. These guys were all there in 2005 when Tony Dungy had to deal with the horrible suicide of his son. So this team knows what it's about to deal with adversity. At least these veterans do, and they're hoping they're going to be able to weather the storm for the young guys.
Arthur, let me ask you about one of your other clubs, the Tennessee Titans. They've been up and down quite a bit. It looked like Jake Locker was ready to emerge. We talked just last week, and the way we heard about this now being his team, not Chris Johnson's team. Now he is out at least this week, maybe for a couple weeks. Matt Hasselbeck comes back. Matt Hasselbeck is capable of coming out and lighting it up. Is this going to create a problem for Mike Munchak, or are they just hoping that Hasselbeck can do as well as he can this weekend?
You know, they're obviously going to hope he can do as well as he can, but there's no question this is tough timing. Jake Locker coming off the best game of his career, and this is a the same injury he suffered in the opener, so that left shoulder, he is dealing with some more discomfort the second time around. They're saying it could be at least a couple weeks. They're saying he won't need surgery, or at least not during the season, but obviously this is a tough blow. The good news is that Matt Hasselbeck is probably as good as any backup in the league, and while they will have to change the game plan a little bit, you won't see the same designed runs, obviously, for a Matt Hasselbeck that you did for Jake Locker. They may not have the same explosiveness downfield, but I don't think there's a more prepared backup in the league than Matt Hasselbeck.
Yeah, a lot of people either feel he's the best backup in the league and better than most of the starters in this league still to this day. Thank you very much for your work on those stories. Associate editor Kevin Fishbane also with us. New York Jets, Kevin, just one big injury blow after another. Darrell Revis 1 week, Santonio Holmes the next. Where are they at?
Yeah, they got a lot of problems, Wayne, and it doesn't help that they're going to be on Monday night this week in front of a national TV audience against maybe the best team in the NFL, a Houston Texans team. That's just a terrible matchup for the Jets. And you know what? It would have been a bad matchup for the Jets even if they had Santonio Holmes and Darrell Revis. So now they lose their best offensive playmaker. They really were thin at receiver to begin with. They've been thin at receiver for, you know, since the end of last year. And even last year, you could point out problems with the receiving core. Now they're counting on unproven young guys, journeymen like Chaz Schulz and Jason Hill. You know, they need Dustin Keller back. They need the run game to get going. They need a lot of things to work in their favor at this point to right the ship.
All right. Thank you very much, Kevin. We'll be back with more Way We Hear It when your current edition of Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. And we continue with the Way We Hear It with executive editor Dan Arkush. Dan in Seattle, okay, they steal a win from the Packers or are handed a win from the Packers on a Monday night. Then they go down to St. Louis with all kinds of confidence and momentum and get knocked off by the Rams. Where are they at with Pete Carroll, with Russell Wilson, who's been largely unproductive, and then Matt Flynn and his sore arm?
Well, Wayne, I think the big thing is that the bloom, I think, is finally off that Russell Wilson rose out there in the Pacific Northwest. The cries are growing for a change to Matt Flynn. I mean, the one thing there is Flynn's degree of readiness. He does have tendonitis in his elbow, an injury that he's never had before, so that is a factor that comes into play. But the thing with Wilson is that his passing average of 130.8 yards per game is the last among qualifying starters. That's understandable because Marshawn Lynch is practically the entire offense, but he's been terrible on third down and in the red zone, a league worst 11 of 27 in that regard. And, you know, people point to Flynn, who everybody thought was going to be the guy, and so now the controversy seems to be back.
You know, Dan, the thing that's stunning to me about Wilson and the fact that they ever went with him in the first place, I mean, maybe they didn't have a choice because of the injury to the elbow of Matt Flynn. Maybe they should have kept Tavares Jackson. But if you go back and look at all of Wilson's success in the preseason, they were all jump balls and back shoulder throws. I mean, he's not shown at any point that he's ready to run an NFL passing game and make all the throws you have to make.
You know, I agree with that, Hub. Really, the game that he, you know, won the job in was a game where, ironically, Flynn, you know, had that flare-up with the tendonitis, and that was against the Chiefs, and Wilson just went wild, and I think Pete Carroll just kind of got wowed by that particular performance. Now we're starting to see the real growing pains with this kid.
Also, another one of your teams, the Green Bay Packers, a lot of talk about re-signing Greg Jennings, one of several key players on this Green Bay team that the Packers eventually will have to sign or not sign in the next several years. Now, Jennings' contract's up after this year. He's currently down with a groin injury. He won't play this week. There's a good possibility he may not play for the next couple of weeks, but what do you hear in terms of the Packers' tendency to sign him or not?
Wayne, I'm hearing from a lot of our sources up there that he's probably as good as gone, just because there are just so many other bigger contract priorities, most notably Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews, obviously two outstanding players, and even B.J. Raji, whose contract expires after the 2013 season. I think they need to take care of those guys. And the other thing, you know, that you have to take into account with Jennings is that the Packers, you know, have other really good receivers. I mean, James Jones has come on really strong. I'm hearing that, you know, people think he's been the best receiver so far this year for the Packers. So, you know, they have enough without Jennings, perhaps. So that's kind of what we're seeing here.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan. A senior editor, Eric Edholm, joins us. Eric, every year they build up the Cowboys,
And every year it seems like we're disappointed. That game against the Bears the other night, they really weren't very competitive at all, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts up front. I mean, everybody can talk about Tony Romo, his 5 interceptions, rightfully so. You can talk about Dez Bryant and the other receivers like Kevin Ogletree, who, you know, I mean, Jason Garrett said this week, those guys, poor routes and lack of recognition of coverages and adjustments, side adjustments they were supposed to make, led to some of those picks. So, you know, I mean, it's a group effort, but to me, it starts up front with that offensive line. I mean, Tyron Smith struggled at left tackle after being great last year on the right side. Doug Free has been awful the last 2 years, especially this season at right tackle. Mackenzie Bernadeau would deserve to get benched if there was another good option off the bench. So, you know, they're not making any changes, which is shocking to a lot of people. But the run game, the pass protection, it's really failed so far.
And you know, Eric, offensive line woes are epidemic around the NFL right now. You're being a little less charitable with Tony Romo than I would be, though. And Romo stunk. There's no question about that. But Dez Bryant put all the stink on that smell. I mean, it was ridiculous, the mistakes that he made out there. And you know, I thought Romo at least showed some leadership in not calling the kid out worse than he did, particularly on the first pick six to Pina Tillman.
Yeah, he did. I mean, that was a tough play. He went on the sideline, slung his arm around him, he tried to get him on the same page, and there were repeated mistakes after that point. So, you know, a lot of this does go on Brian. I'm not excusing Romo's performance, but at the end of the game there, those last couple picks, he's just trying to make a play. They're down 3 scores, so I didn't really blame him for those. And, you know, I thought the performance looked a lot worse on paper than it really did in reality.
Well, and guys, there was one play later in the ballgame where Bryant is 5 yards behind, I don't remember if it was Pina Tillman or Tim Jennings, and they're still in the game. He just drops the ball.
Yep.
With no reaction, no emotion. I mean, it was a perfectly thrown ball, and it puts him back in the game. And Dez Bryant, 3 years in, there's no excuse for this anymore. He's got to know these routes. He's got to have this concentration. He's got to have this focus if he's going to be successful.
It's never been there consistently. I mean, you know, this was supposed to be his breakout season. He looked like the best player in Oxnard in training camp, and yet he hasn't been able to translate it on the field in regular season games. And the Cowboys are saying to themselves, you know, this is why we wouldn't maybe consider extending him in a year.
Eric at home on the Dallas Cowboys. Stay tuned. We've got the games coming up next on this Week 5 edition of Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrivee along with Hub Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, Dallas, Detroit, Oakland, and Tampa Bay get the week off. The Arizona Cardinals and the St. Louis Rams began the weekend on Thursday night. But with our weekend airtimes around the country, we focus on the Sunday and Monday action in the NFL. The Miami Dolphins are coming off a near upset of the Arizona Cardinals in their place and have played a lot better than their 1-3 record suggests. And this week, they're on the road at Cincinnati to take on the Bengals, who pretty much cruised over Jacksonville last Sunday and are tied to the Ravens atop the AFC North at 1-3. The Bengals tightened up their pass protection, making it a clean day for quarterback Andy Dalton last week. No sacks, just one quarterback hit. The Dolphins, on the other hand, found a pass rush against the Cardinals with 8 sacks after making just 3 in the first 3 weeks of the campaign. Hey, I'm a little surprised at what Miami has done offensively. They've been much better than advertised. Ryan Tannehill, the rookie who was apparently not ready for prime time, he went off for 431 passing yards, a touchdown, and 2 interceptions against the highly regarded Cardinal defense. This week, he challenges the 16th-ranked pass defense in the league at Cincinnati. The Indianapolis Colts, coming off a bye week, should be rested physically for their encounter with the Green Bay Packers in Lucas Oil Stadium this Sunday. But where they are mentally, spiritually, after finding out their head coach Chuck Pagano will miss most of the rest of this season while battling leukemia, remains to be seen. The Packers are coming in off a 28-27 victory over the New Orleans Saints. They will not have all-pro wide receiver Greg Jennings, who's out indefinitely with a lingering groin injury. Aaron Rodgers, their quarterback, got on track, becoming the NFC Offensive Player of the Week with 4 touchdown passes as the Packers' offense started to look like the Green Bay offense of last year. The Colts will be bolstered by the return of all-pro pass rusher Dwight Freeney, who's been out since week 1 with an ankle injury. But he and Robert Mathis are making the transition from defensive ends in a 4-3 look to outside linebackers in the new 3-4 defense. Sometimes that transition, Hub, can be a little hit or miss.
It can be, and for the Cleveland Browns, it's all been hit or miss early as they visit the New York Giants this week. They were, I thought, going to be one of the surprise surprise teams, but the four-game suspension to Joe Hayden, the loss of defensive lineman Phil Taylor, their two best defensive players, have really hurt them. Statistically, they're a mess. They have been competitive in almost every game, though. They haven't gotten blown out yet, and they do get Hayden back. His four-game suspension now over. For the New York Giants, I was on the sideline Sunday night for Dow Global Radio with that Eagles game. That was two really good football teams, and the Giants just made one mistake too many, the interception that Peyton Manning threw in the third period, but they're clicking on all cylinders. Now, the injuries at wide receiver are going to hurt them. Hakeem Nicks may be out again, and Ramsey's Barden is now nicked up, but Reuben Randall, the second-round draft choice, is ready to step up. Giants figure to be a big favorite here, looking to bounce back after that loss to the Eagles, but the Cleveland Browns always seem to compete. This may be a more entertaining football game than anybody expects. Chicago Bears are going to visit the Jacksonville Jaguars, and Wayne, I won't lie to you, I don't expect this to be a very competitive football game. You talk about the various problems the Jacksonville Jaguars have. Here's the worst when they're playing the Chicago Bears. They have two sacks in four games. The one thing you have to do to the Chicago Bears to compete with them is rush Jay Cutler and pressure him, and the Jaguars just can't do it. Beyond that, their offense not very good. Blaine Gabbert still struggling to arrive at quarterback, and the Bears coming off easily their best performance of the season. They were very impressive Monday night. Their cornerback, Tim Jennings, just named the NFC Defensive Player of the Month. It's all going right in Chicago right now, and this appears to be a soft spot on the schedule where they maybe even get another easy one before they get into the tougher part of their schedule.
Well, Hub, the Seattle Seahawks took a step back last week following their dramatic Monday night win over the Packers. They traveled to St. Louis, so the Rams took them down a notch, 19-13. And this week they travel cross-country to Charlotte, where they face the Carolina Panthers, who were two-point losers to Atlanta last week and are off to a disappointing 1-3 start. Job one for the Panthers will be stopping Marshawn Lynch, the great running back, who's piled up 423 rushing yards on 92 carries to lead the league. This despite an ever-changing front ahead of him. The Seahawks have used four different offensive line combinations in four games, proving once again that often it's the runner that makes the line, not the other way around. Statistically, Carolina does not seem up to the task of stopping the run, ranking 25th in rush defense, 29th in yards per running attempt. Quarterback Cam Newton came alive in the Week 4 loss to the Falcons. He rushed for 86 yards and a touchdown and posted a 119.3 passer rating. This should be an interesting game in Charlotte.
Well, one that looked like it was great and may still be is Buffalo Bills visiting the San Francisco 49ers. But let's start with the obvious here. There's only one team in the NFL that travels well through four time zones. That's the 49ers, and they're home this week. The Buffalo Bills going to go 4,000 miles to take on maybe the best team in the NFL. And here's the worst matchup for the Bills. The 49ers, third in the NFL running the football. Last week, they had nine different players total 245 yards rushing against the New York Jets. The Buffalo Bills defense, just 28th versus the run. Now, the Bills also run the ball pretty well. The problem is the Niners are one of the best run defenses in the league, and they're just as good against the pass and in total defense. I think the thing to keep an eye on here, Ryan Fitzpatrick, is he the answer or is he the problem? Last week against New England, 350 yards and four touchdowns, but four picks. He throws too many interceptions, and nobody likes to play center field more than the safeties on the San Francisco 49ers.
All right, Hub, coming up, we start breaking down the big games this weekend on Pro Football Weekly. We resume with this regular season edition of Pro Football Weekly along with Hub Arkush. I'm Wayne Larrabee. The Tennessee Titans head to Minneapolis to face one of the league's surprise teams, the Minnesota Vikings, who at 3-1 are tied to the Bears atop the NFC North. Hub, a couple of things about this game, as we found out in the way we hear it. It looks like Matthew Hasselbeck, not looks like, he is going to start this ball game for Tennessee. Certainly, he's a veteran quarterback. A lot of us think he might be the best backup quarterback in the league. He can light it up against anybody. There's no doubt about that. But the Vikings, as Nolan Araki described, is the surprise team, at least in the NFC.
Well, they are. We've talked about these clubs at length in the way we hear it. But just to add a little color to this one, the Tennessee Titans come in just 28th running the football. Minnesota's run defense, 7th league, has been great. But Chris Johnson did go off last week with 141 yards. Maybe that is the beginning of Tennessee starting to run the ball more effectively. Other thing, the Titans defense, they just give up so many points. They've been outscored 151-81 in their four games. And then the last piece here to keep an eye on, Wayne, in addition to Christian Ponder taking care of the football and the Vikings running the ball and playing run defense, their special teams, outstanding. They had a punt return for a touchdown and a kickoff return for a touchdown. That was the difference against the Lions last week. This is a lot tougher road trip for the Titans than they may have envisioned when the schedule first came out.
The Baltimore Ravens have won three of their first four games, and with 10 days of rest, head to Kansas City, where the 1-3 Chiefs may be losing more than just games. The faith of their faithful. Craig Heist has the story.
The Ravens enter their game with the Chiefs Sunday at Arrowhead Stadium at 3-1, and they did it playing a stretch of four games in 18 days. So to be 3-1 at the quarter pole for linebacker Ray Lewis is a big deal.
For us to be right now sitting at 3-1, no losses in the AFC, that's huge. That's huge, you know, when you look at the people that's going to be fighting, you know, at the end of the year. And to get off to a fast start is always important.
But now for the Ravens, they start a stretch of playing three of their next four on the road, and they've lost their only road game this year at Philadelphia. The Chiefs come in at 1-3, and they've turned the ball over 15 times so far this year, which leads the league. Quarterback Matt Cassel has thrown seven picks and fumbled three times, accounting for two-thirds of those turnovers. But there are weapons with this team, namely running back Jamaal Charles, who's rushed for 411 yards in four games, although 233 of that came in week three against the Saints. Yet head coach John Harbaugh of the Ravens is concerned.
He can run them all. He runs the inside plays, the outside plays. He's not just a guy that tries to run outside, though he does. He can cut it back. He cut it all the way back last week against San Diego. Someone brought that up. So a very special player.
Charles and Ravens running back Ray Rice are ranked 1-2 in net yards from scrimmage through week four. The Ravens offense has been efficient. They have an NFL high 8 touchdown drives of at least 80 yards and a league best 2 drives of at least 90. And they have 26 plays of at least 20 yards or more, the most in the league. And the receiving corps of Torrey Smith, Jacoby Jones, and Anquan Boldin have meshed well for quarterback Joe Flacco.
Definitely. I mean, we've had guys that have been in this offense, and we added Jacoby this year, and you know, he stepped right in and played a big role. But you know, because we have had that experience, mainly last year with some of these young guys, we were able to come out here early on this year and really hit the ground running right away.
The Ravens will try to start the season 4-1 for the third straight season. They are 7-1 against the AFC West under Harbaugh. The Chiefs own the lead in the season series 3-2, but the Ravens did hand it to them last year in the divisional round at Arrowhead, 30-7. I'm Craig Heist for Pro Football Weekly.
Well, Wayne, unlike certain politicians out there, as a matter of fact, unlike every politician out there, I believe when you say it, you got to own it. I picked the Kansas City Chiefs to win the AFC and go to the Super Bowl this year, and it's a good thing I'm not running for office, and it was a bad pick. But I don't understand how they're this bad. They've got too much talent on this football team to be this bad. Matt Cassel has done too much in this league to play as badly as he is playing. I don't know if it falls on Romeo Crennel. I don't know if we're overrating the talent. I do know the Baltimore Ravens have not been quite as good as their record indicates. I was on the sidelines again for their game a couple weeks ago on Sunday night against the Patriots, and with real officials on the field, they don't win that game. They're not consistent. The offense goes in spurts, and the defense has lost half a step. All that said, based on the way these clubs are playing so far, you got like the Ravens' chances here.
All right, Hub, the most balanced team, in my opinion, in the NFL in terms of strength of offense, defense, even special teams, the undefeated Houston Texans. They're in the Meadowlands for what shapes up as a mismatch with an overmatched New York Jets team coming off a 34-0 disaster at the hands of the San Francisco 49ers. Hub, let me ask you, your impressions in general of this Houston team?
They're really good, Wayne. I think that they are the best team in the AFC right now. The only team I see with the personnel to maybe catch them later is the Patriots. I'm not sure they're as good as the 49ers yet, but they're younger and they're developing, so they may be by the end of the season. One of the questions people have is, you know, the trip to Denver was interesting. I'm not sure if the Broncos are better than a 500 team. Other than that, they've had the soft part of their schedule first. They do have to traverse the NFC North later in the season. This was supposed to be actually the first real, you know, testing ground for them on the schedule, but now we look at where the Jets are at coming into the football game. They're 31st in the league against the run. That was skewed a little bit by what the Niners did to them last week, but the Niners did that just last week, and now Houston comes in with Arian Foster and Ben Tate both doing a nice job. Foster's got to hold on to the football. Matt Schaub and Andre Johnson seem to be just heating up, and their defense, you talk about the problems that Mark Sanchez has had until now, they're going to be in his face like nothing he has seen in a long time. J.J. Watt, for my money, could be the defensive MVP this year. You've got Connor Barwin rushing the passer like Matt Brooks. It comes from all over the place, and I think the Texans clearly are the best team in the AFC heading into this ballgame.
There are times, Hub, when J.J. Watt is just flat-out unblockable. I mean, he's just always in the backfield.
You know, when you see guys who last like this into the middle, late part of the first round, and you say, what was everybody else looking at? Because he is so good right now.
All right, we'll have more breakdowns of NFL games this weekend when we return to Pro Football Weekly. We continue with this Week 5 edition of Pro Football Weekly. Along with Hub Arkush, I'm Wayne Larrabee. The 0-4 New Orleans Saints look to break through against a San Diego club off to a 3-1 start. And Hub, you know, I saw the Saints in person last week. I studied them the previous two games on tape. And, you know, the thing about New Orleans is they do have a lot of big-name, big-time playmakers on the offensive side of the football. They're really struggling on defense. But, again, when you look at Drew Brees and some of his playmakers, at some point, this is a very good 0-4 team.
Well, they can,
as 0-4 teams go.
Yeah, I mean, they can run, they can pass, and they can score points with anybody, and I don't think that's been lost. Now, Brees did play his best game of the season last week against the Packers. Remember, he was completing only 55% of his passes through 3 weeks. That's completely un-Drew Brees-like. So there were issues on offense, too. Maybe they got that figured out in Lambeau last week, even though they lost. But I don't know what they're going to do about the defense. And you know, I know all the fingers are going to point at Steve Spagnuolo, and that's fair. He's the new defensive coordinator, but I think there's a talent deficit there, too. They've got a bunch of nice players. I don't see the big playmakers on that defense. Their best player is Curtis Lofton, who's replacing Jonathan Vilma. Some people will say they miss Vilma. So the wild card here, I thought coming out of Green Bay, that was it. Play their best game, still lose. Now they're 0-4. But the league has allowed Sean Payton and Joe Vitt and Mickey Loomis to come and be present. Drew Brees is going to break Johnny Unitas' record. He's going to throw a touchdown pass in the 48th straight game. Will that make a difference? Will it energize this team? Maybe, but San Diego's playing pretty good defense right now, particularly with those young pass rushers, and they can score points too. So I'm really looking forward to this one. This one could be the best air show of the weekend.
Philadelphia Eagles are 3-1 coming off their victory over the Giants last week, and this week they're in Pittsburgh where the 1-2 Steelers should be rested and ready off their bye week. We get more from Jim Colony.
Here is a little-known Steelers factoid that will become more known between now and kickoff. No Mike Tomlin Steelers team has ever started 1-3, but that could happen if Tomlin loses to the Eagles this weekend.
I don't worry about that, man. It's Philly week for us. You know, that's somewhat storytelling. I don't do that. I just simply live the journey.
Well, that journey includes a matchup against Michael Vick and the Eagles, who are a more Tomlin-like 3-1 after four games under quarterback Michael Vick, who finally eliminated turnovers in the 19-17 win over the Giants. Steelers safety Ryan Clark thinks the Steelers can hit Vick and force some turnovers, but Clark says they have to be smart about it.
In trying to get to him, you have to be very sound in your technique and also very sound in your gap. So where you see opportunities to exploit what he does, he also can exploit you if you're trying to make plays that's kind of out of the sense of the defense.
Yeah, and it's not just Vic and those fast receivers. Tomlin is well aware of LeSean McCoy, who shared the Steelers' practice facility as a star at the University of Pittsburgh.
A young man from next door I've known for a long time is really becoming one of the best in the business. He's good with the ball in his hands. He is. He's, you know, he's good at ad-libbing. He's an E to E runner, if you will. It doesn't matter where they give him the ball. He's going to find open space, whether it's front side, bouncing the ball to the perimeter. He's also capable of cutting it all the way back.
Yeah, I guess that would be E to E. McCoy third in the league at 98 yards per game. 123 of those came against the Giants last week. McCoy says, though, he needs to score more touchdowns and quit fumbling. Philly's defense can bring it. Jason Babb and Trent Cole combined for nearly 30 sacks a year ago. Pittsburgh receiver Mike Wallace says that he and the wideouts need to help out.
That's a big part of this week's game plan, us versus those cornerbacks, because of their front. And they get off so fast that we don't really have that much time to run our routes. We have to really get moving and just try and get open.
Now, the Steelers' defense has not been good so far, giving up 34 points to the Raiders last time out, and Oakland scored a total of 33 in the other three games. But Eagles coach Andy Reid expects to see a different Pittsburgh bunch with linebacker James Harrison and safety Troy Polamalu expected back in the lineup.
They're good no matter who's in there, really. But, yeah, those two in there, those are two great players. And I know they're going to play and be ready.
In fact, coming off the bye, the Steelers have nothing significant listed on their injury report. In Pittsburgh, I'm Jim Colony for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, two quick thoughts on this one. As I mentioned earlier, I was on the sidelines Sunday night. Eagles-Giants, two really good football teams. I'm very impressed by the Eagles. They've got some offensive line woes, but other than that, they're loaded pretty much everywhere. For the Pittsburgh Steelers, you don't want to catch the Pittsburgh Steelers coming off a bye in any circumstances. They're 4-1 the last 5 years, but particularly when they're 1-2 and angry. And I don't think Jim mentioned Rashard Mendenhall figures to be close to full speed here as well. They've really struggled running the football. This is a dangerous spot for the Eagles, even though they may be the better team.
The undefeated Atlanta Falcons are in Washington to face RG3 and the Redskins. The Skins 2-2 in a log jam with the Cowboys and Giants behind the Eagles in the NFC East. Falcons atop the NFC South as one of three unbeatens in the NFL. How good are the Falcons?
Well, you know, Wayne, here again, I got to be careful because I finally drank the Kool-Aid last week. I thought, well, Carolina can't do anything with them in Atlanta, and Carolina darn near beat them. So they're very good on offense, and they're only going to get better. Matt Ryan is really flourishing under the new offensive coordinator, Dirk Cutter. Julio Jones is becoming, one of the great wide receivers in the league. Roddy White was already one of the greats. Tony Gonzalez, lockdown Hall of Famer. They've got Michael Turner. They got to get a little more out of the running game. So the offense is loaded. Defensively, I'm not so sure in Carolina. I thought exploited them a little bit. And Washington, RG3, they've been putting up points. Now, RG3 is starting to learn some tough lessons. He is a rookie quarterback with a lot less to learn. I don't think that the Falcons go on the road and blow one here, but the Skins have been right down to the wire in every game they've played. The problem is that their defense gets a little weaker each week.
All right, Hub, stay tuned. We've got the headliner, and it's just ahead on this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. The headliner is an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. It's the renewal of Manning versus Brady as the Denver Broncos travel to New England to take on the Patriots. Our headliner is previewed by Mike Petralia.
For the first time in their legendary rivalry, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady will be facing Peyton Manning in a game not involving the Colts. Manning comes to Foxborough on Sunday with the 2-2 Broncos, while Brady's Patriots are also 2-2 on the season. Brady leads the all-time series between the two future Hall of Famers 8-4, including 2-1 in the postseason.
He's a friend of mine, so, we don't talk much during the season. But I think there's someone that certainly I've always looked up to and admired and really respect the way that, he plays the position and the way he works, the way he leads. He's been a phenomenal player, and we played against him for a long time at the Colts, and it's felt like every year. And, so you see a lot of those games, and, obviously I've learned a lot from him.
This also marks the first time in NFL history two quarterbacks with at least 300 touchdown passes are squaring off. Manning has 407 TD passes, including 8 this season, while Brady has 7 of his 307 this year.
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's the Patriots versus the Broncos, and I have a job to do, and so does, the defensive guys have a job to do. You're not blind to the fact that there's a great player, on the other side of the ball that, is capable of having a great performance, and I think you realize that that's, part of the game.
Manning says he's well aware that the 35-year-old Brady said he'd like to play until he's 40. Manning, who's 36, has no such goals right now.
I know Tom has said that before, how long he wants to play. I don't have that number in mind, maybe quite like he does, but I still have a passion for it. I still enjoy the preparation, the work of it.
The Patriots scored a franchise record 45 second-half points, including 31 in the fourth quarter last week to demolish the Bills 52-28 at Ralph Wilson Stadium, avoiding their first three-game losing streak since 2002. Manning was a remarkable 30 of 38 for 338 yards and 3 touchdowns in a 37-6 rout of the Raiders on Sunday. In New England, Mike Petralia, Pro Football Weekly.
Wayne, you look at this one, and I love the Manning-Brady thing, but I think personally the Patriots are a much better football team. I mean, these two teams just met in the playoffs last year. Granted, it was Tim Tebow at quarterback, but that wasn't the only problem, the way that the Patriots smoked them. And I think the Patriots are going to be a team that gets better week to week. I'm not sure what's up with Denver. I think they'll get better as they get more comfortable with Peyton Manning, but I look at that talent, and I think John Elway's got some work to do on the rest of that roster besides his quarterback position.
All right, Hub, time for the Handicapper's Corner, featuring Pro Football Weekly's in-house handicapping expert, senior editor Mike Wilkie,
welcome to the program, and I got to tell you, there's a note you gave me that just jumps off the sheet and screams for discussion. Underdogs through 4 weeks, 38-23-2 against the spread this year. Now, they say never bet to stop a trend. That's a pretty remarkable trend through 4 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, really, favorites have struggled quite a bit. And, last week, 9 different underdogs, at least, maybe 10, depending upon if you got the Giants at the right time versus the Eagles. Nevertheless, we had the Vikings, the Bears, the Rams, the Redskins, the Bengals all winning outright. right as dogs. And to begin this season, really the underdogs have been the way to go.
All right, now we're getting a pick of the week from you each week. We struggled a little bit last week, didn't see the 49er thrashing of the Jets coming, so kind of 0-1. We'll keep track here because I know you're going to give us winners. What do you like this week as we head into week five?
You know, I'm going to stick with this trend of underdogs, and a team I like to rebound this week is Seattle at Carolina. I just think the edge in the running game, both run defense against Carolina and also the running game versus Carolina's defense, I think are going to be Seattle's best attributes. And when you look at how they played at St. Louis last week, I think it was a sneaky good performance. St. Louis, I think, really played above the line on special teams. Field goals of 58 and 60 yards, a fake field goal touchdown. I really think Seattle played pretty well in that game, all things considered. I think they're the better team than Carolina, getting points on the road. I know west to east can be difficult. Nonetheless, I like the Seahawks plus the 3.
All right, Mike, thank you. Thank you very much. We'll visit with Wilkie, Mike Wilkening, our senior handicapper at Pro Football Weekly every week, Wayne, and a lot of fun picking games.
Absolutely, Hub. Stay tuned. We've got the publisher's pen, and it's just ahead on this Week 5 edition of Pro Football Weekly next. The Publisher's Pen, with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, Wayne, I am somewhat fascinated by what Wilkie just mentioned. He talked about this remarkable winning record for teams against the point spread. Forget the point spread. Underdogs are beating favorites. You talk about parity around the NFL. It's been everybody's favorite topic for 20 years now, but I'm not sure we've ever seen it more than we're seeing this year when you look at some of the teams who have absolutely shocked us. We started the show visiting with our senior editor and lead talent evaluator, Nolan Naraki, talking about the Minnesota Vikings. Now, they sit there at 3-1 with a somewhat favorable schedule, at least for a few more weeks, and we keep waiting for them to come apart. But if you look at past seasons, what if they don't? Remember that ridiculous statistic. Over the last 16 years, at least one team in one of the eight divisions in the NFL has gone from worst to first. Most years it's two, and some years it's three. So who could it be this year? Well, the Minnesota Vikings appear to be one of those clubs. Now, another team you got to look at, even though they weren't last year, so the Arizona Cardinals don't qualify for that statistic, they're 4-0, or at least they were at the time of this taping. They were getting ready for a Thursday night game. And I look at the Arizona Cardinals, and I keep telling myself, well, they're not really that good. They're struggling tremendously on offense. But you know what? They're absolutely loaded on defense, and you can win a lot of games playing good defense in the NFL. Are there a few other teams out there we can't figure out? Miami Dolphins' record doesn't show up, but they're playing excellent football, been very competitive. You talk about the Carolina Panthers, who, you know, even though they were 1-3 as we taped this show, had a few games that they easily could have won. There is no telling anymore, Wayne. We've just reached a point in the NFL where wherever you were at the end of last season, it doesn't necessarily translate to opening day the following year.
Yeah, we're still sorting out this year. Forget about last year. Thanks, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Bears and Falcons Radio Networks. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates in the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.